Now, it's obvious, even from the very little that I've said, that these four incidents, these four myths, have a very deep psychological and spiritual significance. And it's also interesting to note that the four main figures of these myths form a definite set. Apart from the figure of the Buddha himself, what are the principal figures of these four myths? First of all, Mara, the evil one. Then the earth goddess. Then Brahma. And then Muchalinda. And their order of appearance is also rather interesting. First of all, Mara appears, then the earth goddess appears, then Brahma appears, and then Muchalinda. And I'm going to make what may be a rather bold suggestion. It seems to me that these four figures represent the four principal archetypes according to Jung. And their appearance represents the process of the integration of these archetypes into the conscious mind. In other words, represents what Jung calls the process of individuation. Mara represents the shadow, what Jung calls the shadow. The shadow is the repressed side, the darker side of our own nature. If any spiritual progress is to be made, this has to be dealt with. We have to let the shadow side come up. We have to see our own darker side and integrate it into our conscious attitude. We have to recognize it as our shadow, not project it upwards and say, well, that's somebody else, not me. I have to recognize it as me, as myself, as part of myself. This is me behaving in that way. And then integrate it into the conscious attitude by resolving it. So Mara represents the shadow, or what Jung calls the shadow. Then the earth goddess represents the anima. She comes up from the depths, from the earth. And the anima is the what we may describe as the repressed feminine part of the masculine psyche. Every mind, every psyche is, we may say, both masculine and feminine. But in the case of a man, the feminine side is repressed. It's in the unconscious. In the case of a woman, the repressed side is called the animus. So we may say that the earth goddess represents the repressed feminine side of the masculine unconscious, which also must be brought up and resolved, just as the earth goddess appears in the myth, and integrated into the conscious mind, into the conscious attitude. In other words, the appearance of the earth goddess represents the process of the integration into the masculine conscious psyche of the unconscious femininity. Now, Brahma represents the wise old man archetype, the teacher. In Buddhist art, it's interesting to see he's represented with white hair and white beard. He's a sort of God the Father figure. So he represents a sort of voice of the higher consciousness, which has to be heard not just as a voice coming from outside oneself, but integrated into one's conscious attitude. And Muchalinda represents the archetype of the young hero. Now, there are many myths in world religions of the birth of the young hero, and the young hero represents the higher consciousness which is born out of the stress and conflict, as it were, of the spiritual life and spiritual progress. So Muchalinda, as I say, represents this birth or emergence of this higher self or higher personality occurring at the end of the individuation process. Now we can go further than this and draw another sort of parallel. We may say that these four figures of Mara, of the earth goddess, of Brahma, and of Muchalinda correspond to the four principal figures of Christian mythology. What does Mara correspond to? Well, obviously, Mara corresponds to Satan. The earth goddess corresponds to the Virgin Mary. Brahma corresponds to God the Father. And Muchalinda corresponds to Christ, the young hero, as it were. But there's a very great difference. Though we can set up a sort of parallelism between these two sets of four, there's a very great difference. in Buddhism, these figures, these archetypal figures, the shadow, the anima, the wise old man, the young hero, that is to say Mara, the earth goddess, Brahma and Mushalinda, these are all regarded as phenomena, aspects of one's own true mind, all regarded as projections of one's own mind. But in Christianity, on the other hand, they are regarded as objectively existent beings. That there is a being called Satan, that there is a Virgin Mary up there in heaven, that there is a God the Father also in heaven, firmly seated upon his throne. Or nowadays perhaps not so firmly seated. And there's also a Christ figure objectively present, out there, Christ the Saviour. So these are all regarded as objectively existent beings. But in Buddhism, these archetypes, these forms, these figures, are regarded, as I've said, as projections, as really alienated parts and fragments of ourselves, so that we have to reclaim what is our own property and integrate them all into our conscious mind and our conscious attitude. So inasmuch as in Christianity these archetypes are regarded not as archetypes but as objectively existent beings, therefore the possibility of their full integration and therefore the possibility of the individuation process taking place, therefore the possibility of gaining full enlightenment doesn't occur. These archetypes live unresolved out there, and the process of integration is not completed. In other words, there's no Buddha, you see. In the Buddhist myth, you've got Mara, the earth goddess, Brahma, and Mushalinda, and you've also got the Buddha, the integrated consciousness which emerges out of the resolution of these archetypes. But in Christianity, there's no emergent Buddha, as it were, because the archetypes are left unresolved, just as figures and beings out there, objectively existent, not recognized as phenomena of one's own true mind or consciousness. Now, these are just a few examples, culled almost at random, one may say, these great myths. And it's quite obvious, even from the fact that some of them seem rather to have gripped your attention, it's obvious that the language of myth still speaks very effectively to the human heart and to the unconscious. And this is, in fact, how Buddhism speaks, what I've called the language of myth, how it gets through to the heart, gets through to the unconscious depths. Now, you can surely tell yourself from your own experience that when something is expounded logically and rationally, you feel it in a certain way. But when you listen to these myths and stories and parables, then you feel it, you experience it in quite a different way. There's a different sort of atmosphere. There's a different sort of feel to it all. And the reason is that the logical exposition reaches the head. But the myth and the story and the parable and the poem, these reach the heart, reach even the unconscious depths of the psyche. So this is not only how but why Buddhism speaks the language of myth.